Look, when it comes to a car, it's all about big. Big on responsiveness, efficiency, and huge fun to drive.
Yeah, but a car needs to be small. An agile and sporty city car that's beautifully designed.
Ah, but a car must be big on features. The latest entertainment system, alloy wheels, rear parking sensors.
But it needs to be small in price. 0% APR representative, a £500 deposit from Mazda, and no minimum customer deposit.
It's got to be the Mazda 2.
Exactly.
So, the big question is...
The small matter of when to book a test drive.
For more information, search Mazda 2 or visit your local Mazda dealer. Mazda personal contract purchase, T's and C's apply. Finance subject to status, 18s or over. Guarantee may be required. Mazda Financial Services excludes Sport Black.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the game. We had a little malfunction there. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo. Nico, how are you?
Russ Cohen, my man.
So let's get right to it. We're going to talk a little Major League Baseball here. Obviously, there was a big fight. The first thing I do want to say, though, there's almost no fighting left in hockey. So for baseball people to use the hockey analogy, just stop doing it. Hockey barely has any fighting anymore. Just stop. But actually, baseball lately has more fighting. And so this goes back to last year with the Joey Bats bat flip. Then he gets drilled in the ribs. Then he gets on the base path. And there's a couple things. So the first one is he definitely overshot the bag, right? And he definitely did it hard. So he was called out right away. Now, for people that think that that was as bad as the Chase Utley, no way in hell that was as bad as the Chase Utley, because Chase Utley was never in the baseline. He went out of the baseline just to hit the guy. So I don't know what your feeling is on that, but that was not as bad as the Chase Utley.
No, he was out. He was just out of the back. He just—I don't—I don't even think it was illegal. He just slid hard and kind of overslid, slid late.
Well, it was illegal because he overslid it, and so they called him out immediately. That's what made it illegal in today's rules.
Okay. Oh, okay. So, yeah, so, it was just like I said. I've seen worse. I've definitely seen worse.
Yeah. So they called him out, and you know, when he gets up and. He eventually gets punched. The problem with Bautista getting punched is not on Runed Odor, the guy who did the punching. It's on Bautista because Bautista raised his hands. And anytime you raise your hands like that, you are risking getting punched in my eyes. So I'm not shocked that he got clocked there. Were you?
No, not at all. Matter of fact, he was kind of like a sitting duck. He was waiting to get popped. As a matter of fact, they had it out for him. You know, they knew exactly when they were
going to
do it. They waited to the very, they waited till the very last game of the season. They've already played, I think, 13 games this year, and they've waited to the last game that they'll never have a chance to face each other again unless they play each other in the playoffs. That will be exciting.
Right.
But, no, he was a sitting duck the whole series, and they waited, and they planned, and they strategized. They waited for his last at-bat. They got him. He got on base. He's a little frustrated, so, yeah, he slid a little hard. But, no, he didn't slide hard enough for what he got. But I want to talk a little bit about that guy, Odor. I think he's one of the youngest ball players in MLB. What a way to come into the game and make a statement. This is the game's one of the greatest hitters in the game, Bautista. And a legendary shot last year in the playoffs to take his team to the next level. And one punch basically just ended that whole thing. I think it's another day. And I think if the Rangers ever played the Blue Jays in the playoffs again, I think the Rangers got the upper hand. I think Rugley has settled that. I think Bautista, he may be weak in the whole season. He may not even get another home run, another hit. I think I'd like to see how he comes back from this. This could just end his career because Rugi you can just tell the emotion. He is intense. And the way the Rangers play the game, they are intense. They want to win. They are mad about not winning last year. And you know what? That's the way you play the game. I mean, I would like to take – I think the Rangers could be favored to beat the Royals.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. There's something – so something else from that sort of came up, and it came up, like, on my Facebook page. So years ago, I don't know if you remember Ray Knight punching Eric Davis. And this is when Ray Knight was on the Mets during the 86 season. So the thing about that was – When Ray Knight punched Eric Davis, They were teammates. They obviously didn't like each other. He became a Met. Davis goes sliding into third. Now, the umpire was late in making a call, so Knight tries to push him off the bag. He bumps him, which is already a problem, right? You shouldn't do that. And so then Davis gets called out, and because of the bump, Davis got up and he grabbed Knight to push him, and then Knight punches him. And I call that a sucker punch because basically Eric Davis could kill Ray Knight. Like, it wasn't even close, right? Ray Knight was a small guy in comparison, and Davis wasn't even thinking about hitting a guy. And basically all Knight had to do was push back, and they would have just, you know, broken it up. But in typical Ray Knight fashion, because he was a bit of a jerk, he punches him. Now, that punch was nowhere near the Odor punch, but I'm just curious about what you thought about that punch in that day.
The Ray Knight punch? Yeah, you know, that, you know, Davis wasn't expecting it. Something like, you know, Batista had full knowledge that it was on. He should have been expecting it. He had his hands up. Yeah, totally different situation. This was man versus man. This is the game at its highest intense levels, and it was a straight knockout punch. I mean, and the Rangers won the game. Like I said, I have so much respect for this young kid, this young second baseman. I actually had a chance to play with his uncle, Rugi Odor. He's a former Cleveland Indian farmhand. He's the current batting instructor for the Akron Indians. And his nephew's now in the big leagues, yeah. And as we were teammates, when I played with Rugi, he's an interesting young guy. He's Venezuelan, and him and I got a chance to room together. So I got a chance to get close to his culture. And some of the things we used to do together is we used to, like, during the day, we would be in our hotel rooms, we would close all the blinds and all the drapes and everything. We would not let any sunlight in the room so that we can try to conserve our energy for the night games. And we went out and we had the greatest meals together. We would only eat some lean chicken and some vegetables. A very humble man, Rugi Odor, his whole family, his whole culture. I can see why, you know, Rugi, the young second baseman now, he wanted to play big leagues because he wanted to be like his uncle. They named him after Rugi. So his name is Rugi Odor. And like I tell you, he's something special for the game here. And I think
he has a brother, too. Yeah, well, apparently he's got a brother, too, in the Rangers organization by the same name, sort of like the George Foreman thing where all his kids have the same name. So in a couple of years, if he makes it, that's going to really confuse everybody.
He will make it because the name is from Rugi. The Rugi, their uncle. Rugi started the whole venture into Major League Baseball, and they all wanted to be just like their uncle. And like I said, Rugi is a special character. I got a chance to live with him. He's a great man, a great character. He's got a great spirit, and he definitely is the spirit of the game. And these two young players coming up, the Rangers are very, very lucky to have these players.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so we'll switch gears a little bit. So the Mets get swept by the Rockies, which isn't the worst thing in the world. It could happen to anybody. But the last game is the problem game because here you are, you're at a point in the season where you're doing better than last year, but you have better players, so the expectations are higher. And you've got DeGrom in a game who's, you know, if not your best pitcher, your second best pitcher. So he's in the game, and there's a man on second, and there's one out, and he makes the call to the bullpen. And I'm thinking, why? It's 102 pitches. Why not let this kid work out of this jam? The bullpen's not been great lately. And then you could, you know, literally skip some guys to get to Familia, who's always great. You need this win. Like, to me, again, you're a guy that will understand this because you don't want to let any wins go by in a 162-game season, even though it's a long season. But a lot of times fans will be like, well, it's May. It's not that big a deal. And, of course, Henderson comes in, who's been, you know, pretty great all year, but you knew that was not going to last all year. And he gets tagged for a two-run homer, and they lose. And my feeling is, and you could tell DeGrom did not want to come out of that game. So he gets tagged for the other two earned runs, and still his ERA is only 2.5. To me, he should have stayed in that game. He threw 102 pitches, 72 strikes. Why would you take him out?
Absolutely. Who are your horses? This is like the just the bonehead management decisions that they've got the power. This is where they think that they're trying to make the right decisions. But you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I think he made the same decision. He tried to rest his players during a 6-game winning streak,
yep,
or something like that. These are,
yep,
just bonehead mistakes. A manager just getting way ahead of himself. Let the game carry itself. The player was, they needed a win. They got one of their top pitchers on the mound. How about giving that young pitcher some confidence and letting him,
mm-hmm,
lead the team to win? They need somebody to step up and take advantage.
Yeah, he just needed two more outs. I get it if you don't want him to come out for the seventh. He just needed two more outs.
That's it.
For the eighth,
rather. Let him finish it up.
Yeah, I mean, so that was really bad. So that, to me, that sends a bad message to the other pitchers on the staff. And this is one bad thing about Dan Worthen and Terry Collins. For all the success they had last year, making it to the World Series and otherwise, they pull pitchers too early, and these young guys get frustrated, and I don't blame them. Now, another problem was, like yesterday, they inserted Diaza, and they basically kept most everybody else where they would normally hit in the lineup, but they made Diaza the leadoff hitter. And it's like, listen, I get the fact that if you've taken out Granderson, you got to put somebody else at leadoff, but don't put Diaza, a guy who barely plays, in leadoff. You have Juan Lagares there, who's got speed, who's hit leadoff before. Why wouldn't you have Lagares in as leadoff? Why would you, in the world, would you put in Diaza? And then Lagares literally only pinched hit in this game, and he went 1-for-1. Like, why did you pay Juan Lagares an extra, I think he's getting like a $3.5-4 million a year deal for a couple more years. Why did you pay him this money if you're going to use Diaza as a leadoff, a guy you just picked up this year, a guy who's hitting 171? Like, he literally should be the last outfield option in my eyes.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know where they got this kid or where they think that he can make a difference to compare to their
free
team
agent
that they had last year.
He's just a free agent.
Yeah.
He's not even a kid. He's older. He's actually, let's see, how old is he? 84, so he's like 27, 20, something like that, 20, yeah, whatever. My math's bad, but he's not a kid.
He's a good major league player. I wouldn't say he's a great addition, a great free agent pick for the Mets. Does he enhance the Mets and make them better? I don't know. We haven't seen that yet. But
yeah,
where's their speed? I mean, where's their speed at leadoff? I mean, come on. When I
well,
was
that's
the
what
Mets
Lagares would have speed. Like,
baseman.
Yeah. Lagares would have given them that speed.
That was the thing that's where I put the curse on the Mets. And how could they get give away a player like me? I stole 46 bases. I hit a home run, 1-for-7. 7 at-bats, you're talking speed, power, it's dominance. I mean, where is their speed? Like I said, the Mets don't scare me. They don't fear me. They're kind of like a paper tiger or something like that. They're going to roar.
They don't have
but
speed.
They're not going to bite.
No, Lagares is like pretty much their only speed, and then occasionally David Wright when he's healthy. But here's the thing. All right, so another problem with this team is they are completely in love with Eric Campbell, a guy who tomorrow I would put you on the team and you would immediately be better than Eric Campbell. Eric Campbell has already had too many at-bats this year. My worry is that with David Wright's back, that Eric Campbell is going to get like 50 games in this year. And this guy is not a major leaguer. And he can field a couple different positions, but he's below average. And he seems like he's Terry Collins' pet player. And so, like, here's his stat line for the year. 26 at-bats. 5 runs, 6 hits, no homers, 1 RBI, 1 steal, hitting .231. And this guy has literally been playing for the entire West Coast road trip, it seems, because, with Wright hurt, he has already played 17 games this year. Like, this is like –
And
my
Flores?
Worry is,
and Flores,
yeah, Flores
is on the bench.
Flores got injured, so that's fine. But they have other guys. They've got Reynolds in the minors. I watched Reynolds in Binghamton. He is a way better hitter. Like, they have other players. They're actually playing, like, a shortstop short. Like, basically, Cabrera is the only guy that could literally play shortstop on the team. And so, like, if his knee were to act up again, they'd still have to call up Reynolds. But instead, they leave Eric Campbell in there, and I almost said Jason Campbell, the quarterback. And to me, Eric Campbell's not a major leaguer. Like, this is something where Met fans are very frustrated with.
Yeah, if they wanted to get a free agent, they should have brought a free agent infielder, somebody that can come in and hit some power.
Yep, I agree with that. And so, this is something where even though Terry Collins went to the World Series last year, don't think his job is safe. Don't really think. But here's – so we do have some breaking news, and it was something that Peter, who called in, mentioned on our show, and you thought it was a good idea. And I remember we just talked about where he might go, but Tim Lincecum is now going to Anaheim. So you called it, and Peter called it. So good job by both of you guys.
Wow, that is breaking news because the Angels desperately need help. I mean, their season's over. I mean, if they don't get some kind of injection real quick, I mean, it's going to be a long year.
Yeah, don't say injection. People in baseball and fans don't want to hear injection. Maybe injection of excitement and pitching. Maybe that's what you mean.
Yeah, those injection days are over because they don't use the needles anymore for the steroids. They just kind of – it's kind of all topical now, I think, and more oral.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a big deal. Tim Lincecum back in the game. You knew he was going to get back in the game. He was just too young. We'll see, though. We'll see how the mechanics go and if he could really hold up. I mean, that's going to really be the issue. That's, to me, the biggest issue. But that's, you know, I think that's exciting because
he was
fun to
watch. I'm surprised he didn't go to Oakland.
Yeah, he could have.
I'm surprised. He's right there. I'm surprised Oakland didn't go after him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility.
His money. That's another thing. It's probably the money. They didn't want to spend the money. And he probably didn't want to go there because of that. And that's damaging to the game.
It is. It is. All right, so let's switch gears to the Giants game where instant replay worked. Basically, a call got overturned, a double play call, and the Diamondbacks thought they had a win, but instead they had a loss. The call helps the Giants win. It's a good double play call because the first thing that you notice is second basemen are getting this new rule. Like for all the people that bitched and moaned and complained, whoever the second baseman was, he was way outside of the bag after touching it. So there's no chance of hitting the runner, throwing the ball into the runner hitting him, nothing. And he has a clear throw at first, throws it a little bit off still, but it gets a good throw off and the first baseman reaches for it. And looks like he may not have held the bag long enough. And you've played first base, and so you've probably had a lot of plays just like that.
You know what? I could never have done it just like that. I tell you what, that's great footwork. That's a great first baseman that the San Francisco Giants have right there. That's a great call. I don't know how he was able to keep his foot on the bag and pick the ball up out of the dirt. What a difficult play it is for a first baseman.
Yep. So
it's good to see the game use the instant replay because a couple years ago that would have been safe and the tying run would have scored and we would have been extra innings and just so many mistakes that the game has been able to overturn with the instant replay.
Yeah, no question about it. So to me that was a big deal and that's a nice case of, hey, this is working now and – so good for Major League Baseball, maybe not good for the Diamondbacks, but hey. All right, so let's talk about the Phillies because while the Mets are, you know, struggling a little bit, the Phillies aren't. And a lot of teams and people, a lot of outlets, I should say, had the Phillies going for 100 losses. I kind of figured they'd be close, but 100 losses is hard. Like I've actually talked about that, and it's really hard to get 100 losses because at the end of the season, some teams mail it in. Also, out of pride, a lot of times managers will run things a certain way, pitching staff and otherwise, so they try not to get 100 losses. Like, it's just nobody wants to get 100 losses anymore. And right now, I don't think the Phillies are going to get 100 losses because they're 22-16. They're a game out of first, and they're a half a game up on the Mets. And the biggest thing is that they're 10-6 at home. It's the pitching. They're 6-4 lately. They don't have great hitting. But the hitting's good enough, and we're learning that, yes, young arms are a big deal.
And they're getting on base. Who's their manager, by the way?
Pete Mackanin.
What's his background? I mean, I need to learn more about him.
Well, he's a former player. He was managing in Lehigh, I believe, before this. And he came in for Ryne Sandberg, and he's done a great job. I mean, he came in last year for Sandberg, and Sandberg, you know, took a pretty early exit. It didn't work out for him. And so far, so good. But let's see.
I'd have to give him the first credit. I'd start off with him, the leader. He obviously is doing something well. The Phillies have done their homework. I'm going to do more research about who he is.
Well, I'm going to tell you who he is. I've got it. So he was drafted by the Senators, the Washington Senators, in 69 in the draft, made his debut with the Senators in 73, and then he went to the Texas Rangers. He had a 9-year career. He also played for the Expos. So if you were a little older, you would have probably run into Pete MacKinnon in Montreal. Then he played for the Phillies and Twins. So he is a former Philly. And in 75, he actually had 12 homers and 44 RBIs. That was his best year. Managerial-wise, right now he's 112. Second base.
Wow. That's quite a story.
Yeah, and it is a good story. And right now he's 112 and 119 as a manager, which is pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good showing so far. So, and Philly's extended him this year. And so I have to say, right now, ahead of schedule, and I guess you really like Herrera, the center fielder. He Odubel Herrera, he's hitting .333. He's got only a couple steals, but he's doing well. Actually, last seven games, he's hitting .345. Actually, he's got six steals.
He's getting on base. And here's the thing. When you get on base, I think his on-base percentage is over .400, and they're playing small ball. The Phillies can beat you 1-0, 3-2, 2-1. They got the pitching, the late inning, and they can manufacture runs now. They don't have to just rely on the big Howard to hit the ball, Babe Ruth, out the ballpark every game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So they're trying to do it that way, and so far it's working. And so you got to give everybody their credit, but MacKinnon deserves a lot of credit. And if this keeps up, he'll be the winner of Manager of the Year. It'll be a runaway compared to what this team was supposed to be and what they were. But again, it is May. We have to see what happens when it starts getting a little hotter and the bats start heating up and their schedule starts getting a little tougher when they start playing teams like the Cubs. And so let's switch to the Cubs. What are your thoughts right now on the Cubs?
Well, again, you want to talk about Manager of the Year. That's a good manager right there to go. You're up against right there at the Cubs.
But he's expected to do well. Like, you expect Joe Maddon to do well.
Yeah, but did you expect him to do this well? I mean,
well, they were a good team last year. I mean, I think the only reason they lost to the Mets was because the Mets pitching was better than their pitching, and nobody was stopping Daniel Murphy. They had no answer for it. But they were a really good team last year. Were they 27-8 good? No. But everybody's got experience now, and they picked up Hayward, who's starting to hit, and Fowler was a great pickup. Like, I told you I wanted Dexter Fowler for the Mets because he would have been their great leadoff hitter for them. They would have dropped Granderson to, you know, probably the fifth spot, and the Mets lineup would have been that much better. He's helping them a ton. You got Chris Bryant. Obviously, they have a heck of a lineup, but they have great pitching too. Rizzo's up to 11 homers. And I like Zobrist. Zobrist is a winner. Again, I wanted the Mets to get him 2 years ago, and they didn't. And so, you know, the addition of that. Now, Jake Arrieta is 7-0.
Zobrist brings that day-to-day, every single day, something to the ballpark, unique, something different. And he's just a gamer. He gets on base. Another thing, another scrapper. And he's always on base, and he's always scoring runs.
Now, Jake Arrieta is 7-0. That's kind of amazing. Here's an amazing thing. I don't know if people have thought about this, but so far – in the baseball-maligned city that Chicago is, because even it's been a while again for the White Sox since they've won again, and the Cubs, obviously, it's been forever. Arrieta 7-0, Chris Sale 8-0. That's amazing. Like, if you started the All-Star game tomorrow, you'd have both pitchers from Chicago. Like, that's never happened.
It's never happened. You could have both teams from Chicago in the World Series. That's never happened. So. Things have never happened in the game, and that's why it's always so awesome. Every year is a new year, and it always brings a new excitement and something that you've never even thought you'd ever see.
Right, and I'm a big fan of that. I like parity. Baseball has a lot of parity now, and so parity is a good thing. It really is. It definitely keeps fans into it. It's fun for us to do our job too. All right, so let's switch to the American League and to the Boston Red Sox. What has been the big reason for their resurgence? Right now they're in a dead heat with Baltimore. We've loved Baltimore for a couple of years now, obviously, and Baltimore is doing great, but why are the Red Sox back in it?
All right, well, let's talk about their manager. Who's their leader?
The Red Sox manager. I know this. Hold on. I'm having a blank. See, you didn't get me on the Phillies, but now on the Red Sox.
I think
Sox,
it's Farrell. I think they still have Farrell.
Oh, John Farrell.
Farrell?
Yeah, John Farrell. Okay. Thank you.
So it really hasn't been a change in manager. He's been there through the success.
He's been
and
there.
Also he's been there through the downfall. I think the biggest you want to say is the biggest change would be a Dombrowski. You want to go straight at the general manager. That's been a big change
yep.
in that organization. And what he
now
brings.
You actually, you played under Dombrowski when he was the Expos GM, right?
Absolutely. I owe my whole life and blood of the major leagues to the man, David Dombrowski. I'll sign his shoes. I keep in contact with him. I congratulate him on his journey there with Boston, and I maintain a relationship with him with the Tigers, and even still to this day, he's one of the greatest GMs in the game. And what I like about Dombrowski is, again, he's different than an Oakland type of general manager where there's no relationship with the players; it's all numbers. Dombrowski is a player's general manager. He does interact with the players. He communicates with the players. He treats the players like humans, and the players respond to that type of relationship. And he's good. He's good. He gets the players, and he gets the owners to spend for the players. And he's got some young players. I like this Mookie Betts they got.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's one of the most fascinating, dynamic players of the game. He reminds me of a Kirby Puckett, just an explosive ball player. And he's
yeah,
a
I mean, I've written.
You look at speed.
I've written about Bogarts.
They've got speed.
So yeah,
powers.
Betts, Pedroia, Bogarts. So they have a good blend there. Here's the thing. So I see that Craig Kimbrel has 10 saves, and I definitely shook my head when Atlanta got rid of him and started just jettisoning contracts. Why would Atlanta get rid of a guy who's obviously that good? Like, that never made
sense. It's economics. It's Oakland. Everybody looks at Oakland, and it's a new ball. It's money ball, and they just want to save as much as they can, and they want to make as much money because, you know what, the owners are making profit no matter what. There's so much money, profit, they can care less about winning games now. It's more so about profit, and it's really sad. It's sad for me to see it because the parity's there. Oakland's been able to save so much money and still maintain competitiveness.
No, this is
so
Atlanta.
Now,
remember 11? No, hold on. Atlanta traded him to the Padres, and then now he's with the Red Sox.
Yeah, because the Red Sox would end up go ahead and spend some money for him. The Padres tried to end up for 1 year. They made a big splash and tried to
yeah.
spend as much as they could, and then they realized they couldn't do it by spending. So now they got to go back to the old drawing board of developing, but you know, it's gotta be a mix. You've gotta have a mix of veterans, the right veterans, and you gotta have a mix of youth. And you gotta just keep it going. You gotta have a mix. You can't have all veterans and you can't have all youth.
So, but the Padres acquire Kimbrel, deal Kimbrel because he's making $25 million, and I'm trying to see. So they got Manuel Margot, Javier Guerrero, Carlos Azuaje, and Logan Allen. Now, I get that, you know, a couple of them are pretty good. I've actually written about Azuaje, I think. But at the end of the day, you dump Kimbrel. You're hoping now that one or two of these prospects do something, but you've basically put Boston back in it.
Exactly. That's all they needed. They needed a closer. They had someone to replace Papelbon, and now they've got, they've got a couple of good starters, both Colts, and a couple of veterans that can get them into the late innings. And they got the offense. They're going to score runs every day. So they're going to be right there at the end of the year.
They're going to be there. And I think you're right. I think Dave Dombrowski deserves a big round of applause because the Kimbrel acquisition and a few other things are a big reason why they've had success. But I'll tell you what, we're running out of time. If there is a sponsor, go ahead and mention them, and then we got to get out.
Yeah, today's sponsor, I want to talk about Nerium International. It's age-defying night cream. This stuff is amazing for your face. You put it on your face and watch the wrinkles just melt away.
All right. I got to admit, I never thought we'd be talking about that. But that's it for the game. We'll catch everybody next time.
All right. Thanks, Rob.
Why test drive the new smart and tough Ford Ranger?
It's ginormous.
It controls music and temperature with voice commands.
It tows its own weight in a weight.
It detects other road users with Ford Alert.
It's a truckosaurus.
Quite. And take a test drive between the 16th and the 23rd of May. You'll save £500. Unlearn test drives with the new Ford Ranger. Smart.
And tough.
Visit ford.co.uk for more details.
Test drive any new Ford Ranger between the 16th and 23rd of May 2016 and receive an additional £500 customer saving on the road price. Vehicles to be contracted by the 25th of May 2016 and registered by the 30th of September 2016. Retail and eligible fleet customers only at participating dealers.